Well, we only have 30 seconds, but what has been the response by the people in El Salvador to the revelations of your news site?
El Salvador is in a great state of turmoil now. One of the reasons being this publication, but there's so many problems. I just want to say before I finish that I'm here speaking because there are many others that cannot speak, because Alejandro Enriquez, who was arrested last night in El Salvador, cannot speak right now, because Roberto Jaco, who died in a prison last night after being arrested in last week after being arrested by the government, can't speak right now, because the Pastor Angel Perez cannot speak right now. We're
Nelson
telling a story in the worship safe.
We have to go, but we're going to continue this conversation in Spanish at democracynow.org. Digital editor for El Faro.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Trying to make ends meet. WRHU 88.7 FM Hempstead Radio Hofstra University, WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 Radio Carnegie Tech, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert in New York, joined by Lydia Marjuanana in South Africa. And we are delighted to be joined today by Anne Liguori. Anne, thank you so much for coming on our show.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Now, for those who don't know necessarily what you do or aren't familiar with your work, give everybody a synopsis, because you could probably do that much better than I could.
Well, I've been a sports broadcaster, journalist, and author for a long time now. I'm on WFAN. I was the first woman to host a call-in sports show. It was called Hey Liguori, What's the Story? It aired for 25 straight years every week. Now I have a show, a golf show on The Fan. The Fan is the number one sports radio station in the country. And we were the first all sports radio station in the country, if you can imagine that, before all these other radio stations went to an all sports format. And the show I do now is called Talking Golf. It's on Sunday mornings. And I was an original on the Golf Channel as well with my own TV show. And I have a show called Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, which aired for 17 years on sports cable networks throughout the country. And I own the archives to that, what I call a treasure chest of interviews with everybody from Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams, Hank Aaron, Will Chamberlain, Billie Jean King. I was in my 20s and 30s, about your age, maybe younger. I hosted, produced, sold the advertising for, distributed, researched, booked the guests. Did pretty much everything for that show. And it, as I said, it aired for 17 years. That show now, I own the archives to it, and we license out the interviews.
That's all very exciting stuff. Now, something I wanted to get into in the beginning is because you mentioned this kind of laundry list of things that you did during your career, which we're going to get into, but it doesn't just happen one day. You wake up and you go, okay, I'm going to start my own show. I'm going to go on The Fan. How did you stumble upon this path when you were younger? Let's say college years, high school, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I've always wanted to be an interviewer, and I was always very athletic. So I kind of merged my athletic interests and abilities with my broadcasting career. And I always wanted to pursue sports broadcasting. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. It took years and years and years and years to build my career. And particularly when I started in the 80s, women weren't doing much in sports broadcasting. There weren't that many opportunities job-wise for women in sports. And when I first started on WFAN, it was very different. A lot of people weren't used to hearing women talking sports at all. Particularly not a call-in sports show. So it took a long time to prove myself, establish my credibility. From there, I pretty much worked very, very hard to build my career. Started out as a freelance journalist. I got the opportunity to write sports for USA Today. And at the same time, I was producing for ABC Radio Sports Network, literally covering every team in New York. One night it was the Mets. The next night it was the Yankees, Knicks, Nets, Jets, Giants. So that gave me a great pretty much entree into the sports world in the New York metropolitan area, where I was interviewing players and meeting sponsorship people. And so when I put together my own show, interview show, I had a lot of contacts, not only the athletes who I could book on the show, but the PR people, you know, sponsorship people. I actually went out and brought in my own sponsors for that show, which I think is my greatest legacy, the Sports Interview Archives. I have over 500 half-hour interview shows with the biggest legends in sports, many of whom aren't with us anymore. I was in my 20s, as I said, and 30s, interviewing these megastars who were much older, and they were so interested in telling their stories. So that's a small part of my career. I'm also an author, just came out with a book called Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. It's my second book. My first book, A Passion for Golf, Celebrity Musings About the Game. So I've been at it for a while, Richard.
It seems that way. Now, was when you were growing up, because you had mentioned you were kind of a pioneer in some ways, which we'll talk about when we get into stuff with The Fan. Were there any particular broadcasters or people that you kind of admired, like necessarily not necessarily women in sports broadcasting, but women in broadcasting in general, that you kind of admired or went, I use this example with people, I go, the I want to do that when you point at the television or you point at the radio.
Well, when I was 3 years old, believe it or not, I can remember being 3 years old in a high chair watching this woman in Cincinnati, Ohio. Her name was Ruth Lyons, and she was truly a pioneer of the talk show genre and really the variety show genre. She was very talented musically. She played the piano, she sang, but she also interviewed the most fascinating guests who came in to the area of Cincinnati, the city of Cincinnati. And I must have been, my mother must have had that show on every day during lunch. And that was my earliest recollection of a woman interviewing fascinating people. And from that, that's my earliest recollection of what I really wanted to do. I can't believe I knew at 3 years old. How many people know what they want to do when you're that young, right? But through the years, look, I admired Barbara Walters. She was a very good interviewer, and the longevity of her career was very impressive. You know, there were women in sports way before me. Unfortunately, the records aren't good, but there were, you know, from what I can gather through being in the business for so long, there were a few women in the 40s and 50s who did radio. In television, my first job was at CBS Sports. You had Phyllis George hosting the NFL Today show, and I was just starting out right out of college, and I had the opportunity for a fellowship program with the International Radio and TV Society. And when my job was at CBS Sports, Phyllis George was there, as was Jane Kennedy. So women were just starting to break in television, sports television, when I started in the early 80s. So I admire all those women who were trailblazers who influenced me. There weren't that many back then, but I certainly took note of those who had those opportunities.
Because we've talked about the women in sports broadcasting, because you started as a freelancer, you were mentioning, correct?
Well, yes. I mean, I've always been independent, Rick. I found that when I started in the 80s, there were so few full-time job opportunities for women in sports. So if I wanted to pursue my goal and my dream of becoming a sports broadcaster and talk show host, I had to really put my career together step by step on my own. So I basically freelanced. You know, I got that job at ABC Radio Sports as a producer, then a stringer, they called it, where I covered every team in New York. And that was freelance. And I freelanced writing for USA Today, the sports pages. So my whole career really was based on being an independent contractor. And then I put my own company together, eventually Anligori Productions, and brought in my own sponsors and ran my own business. And that's what I continue to do. So I've only really worked full time for myself, which I kind of like being my own boss.
That's really interesting that you are full time for yourself, because a lot of times they say to people going into broadcasting that freelance is good as like a side hustle, but it's kind of interesting that you made that like your bread and butter living, being an independent contractor.
I had to. Back when I started, they didn't have jobs. There weren't a lot of opportunities for women. Now, when WFAN first started in 1987, they hired me as a staff talk show host. But within a year and a half of WFAN starting, they fired over 20 people, including myself and Susan Waldman. And I don't know how I managed to continue to host the show, Hey LaGoria, What's the Story? But I went from a full-time staff employee to a part-timer, and I was only paid for those hours of doing the show. So at a very early age, I became an independent contractor, and then I just kind of went with it. I put my own show, my own company together, and put my own TV shows together, brought in my own sponsors. So I wore a lot of hats, and it worked out for me. I continued to do that.
So talk to us about when you were on The Fan, because you continued with your talk with your call-in show, Hey LaGoria, What's the Story? And you did that for quite a long time, correct?
Yeah, Hey LaGoria, What's the Story? Aired weekly for 25 years. But again, I was just paid to do the show. I wasn't
employee.
A staff person. What's that?
I said a part-time employee.
I was a part-time employee, and I did that show for 25 years. And now I'm a part-time employee there, and I host Talking Golf. So all these years, and I've never been full-time at WFAN.
That's really cool, especially because, or really neat, because you were saying, because reading about it, you were the first woman to ever have a call-in show on the Fan.
That's right.
So what was that like? Because you were saying growing up, there wasn't a lot of people that could, well, in your position, that could look up to women in sports broadcasting. But now here you were, pioneering for women in sports broadcasting, while you were just a part-time employee.
Well, when I first started FAN, I was full-time. And then about a year and a half into it, they, you know, like many startups back then, or at any time, they hired too many people and thought they were paying too much to too many people. So a lot of us were let go. But I managed to keep the show. I mean, it was really, it's in a powerful station to this day. And I'm so glad that I was able to continue to host my show. When I first started Hey LaGuardia, What's the Story? I put a lot of pressure on myself to be almost flawless. Women were judged harshly as sports personalities or hosts or reporters because there were so few of us. Nobody was used to hearing women hosting shows back then. So I thought if I failed, I would not only hurt my own career, but perhaps the opportunities for women to get into sports media. And now, all these years later, look at all the women who are in sports media. So, you know, again, there were a number of us trailblazers, and there were women before me, as I mentioned. It was hard times back then, but I enjoyed doing the show, had a great audience, very loyal audience. Hey, LaGuardia, What's the Story? We had so much fun. And to this day, you know, I'll be in Florence, and I remember being in a leather store, and I just asked the sales clerk, how much is that purse? And a guy standing next to me said, Anne LaGuardia, what are you doing here in Italy? You know, he recognized my voice. So it's so funny. I get that all the time. I mean, people really listen to this station and remember me from the early days of the Fan. It's quite satisfying.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that the gentleman heard you in Italy, because you've worked in television. You had a program on the Golf Channel, which we'll get into as well.
Sure. And,
but it's just kind of, because with radio, I have a colleague of mine, we have an evening news broadcast, and she was going into a cab, it's like a 20-year-old girl, and the gentleman asked her, he said, are you so-and-so? She goes, yeah, why? And he goes, I hear you on the radio all the time. And it's just kind of like getting recognized, even as young as we are, to get recognized in some regard, but you're getting recognized in Italy. You worked in television, you worked in radio. Would you say it's a different relationship with the audience being in television versus being in radio?
Oh, absolutely. Radio is very intimate. It's just you, and you have to think as if you're talking, you know, to one person. But, you know, there's thousands of people listening. And it's, you know, you can do it now. I host my shows from my office. Back in the day, we'd go into the studio. You know, every time I hosted Hey LaGuardia, What's the Story? You know, radio is just so much more personal, and you have more time to get on your soapbox and express your opinion. And I just love radio. TV is more formatted and more structured. And I loved hosting conversations with Anne LaGuardia on the Golf Channel. That was, again, I booked my own guests, and I got A-list stars from Celine Dion to Matthew McConaughey, Sylvester Stallone, Kevin Costner, Joe Pesci. The show that I did on the Golf Channel was I would walk and play golf with and interview these A-list stars about their passion for golf and their success stories. It was a lot of fun. We just had, you know, that was a great show. And that aired for the first 5 years of the Golf Channel's inception. So again, I enjoyed that show because I put it together. I came up with the concept myself. I booked the guests. I organized the shoots, the production. And then I would send the footage to the Golf Channel, and they would edit the show and package it and air it primetime every week. So, you know, what do I prefer, radio or TV? I love both of those shows so much. But radio is just, again, so intimate and so comfortable for me to do.
Indeed, like radio is very comfortable and intimate. I don't know, it's just something about radio more than TV, a lot of people say. And having you paved the way for women in media, how have you seen the role of women actually in media evolve over the years? And what changes still need to happen when you look at it?
Well, look, when I started, it was very hard to get a job in sports media as a female. And all these years later, look at all the women who are hosting shows or sideline reporting at major sporting events, or they're in executive positions at sports organizations, front office positions. So yeah, we've come a long way, baby, as they say. That was a Virginia Slims slogan that Virginia Slims used to sponsor women's tennis years ago. We've come a long way. So I'm not going to complain. I know some of the younger women who don't know, perhaps they don't have that historic context that I have because they're young. Maybe they think there needs to be a lot more progress made. There can always be progress made. More money paid, equal money paid for women as men as far as women athletes go. But I've seen such a growth in my 30, 40 years of being in the business that it's just great to see how far we've come in those years. There's still room for improvement. There always is, but it's nice to see the progress.
And as you've mentioned that it hasn't been easy when you started, what made you not give up?
Persistence, perseverance, determination. It would have been very easy to give up because it was so hard. And plus, when I came to New York City right out of college on this fellowship offered by the International Radio and TV Society, my dad had just passed away from cancer a year and a half before I came to New York City. And my brother, who was only 22, got leukemia and didn't make it. And so I came to New York City as a, you know, right out of college, having endured two tragedies in a period of 2.5 years. So it was very, very tough. I thought at that point, if I could handle those tragedies, I could handle anything. And that basically propelled me to work very hard, and work was my therapy. And I didn't know how I was going to afford to pay the rent. Manhattan is a very expensive city, as you know. So I just worked and believed in myself and believed in a higher power. I used to go to Marble Collegiate Church and hear Norman Vincent Peale preach. He was an incredible preacher, an incredible orator and positive thinker. He wrote a best-selling book called The Power of Positive Thinking. And he was just so inspiring. And he really helped me get through, you know, many tough years. And I just, you have to have it inside you. It's so easy to give up, but you have to look at the positive and really appreciate all the good things in your life, because everybody's going to encounter a lot of tough times, challenging times, negative things, but you have to stay positive. That's one of the chapters in my new book, Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Nancy Lopez, one of the 12 legends in the book, shares what she calls play happy golf. And all the themes in that book are not only for golfers, but they transcend golf. And you can apply it to your day-to-day life, no matter who you are, no matter how young you are, how old you are. You have to stay positive. That is just one of the key things that you have to do to be successful. Stay positive, and you know, your work ethic is very important, and that determination and perseverance. I wanted to do what I am doing now so badly that I just continued at it, and I failed. I never wanted to give up. And you're going to have failures along the way, but that helps you grow. And it's really how you deal with the failures, with the challenges and the negative things that happen in your life. It's really how you deal with that determines one's character and one's success, I think.
Well, for those who are looking for, because you just set us up perfectly for the next question, for those who are dealing and are listening to this and are in tough times right now and feel that they've been knocked down, what piece of advice would you give from your own life that could inspire people to get back up again?
Well, again, stay positive. Think of the good things, as hard as it might be. In any given situation, you have to really think of your blessings and the good things that, you know, focus on the good things. Everybody's going to have challenges and obstacles. You just have to figure out a way to maneuver around those obstacles. And you have to, you know, look, I highly recommend pursuing what you're passionate about. That's another chapter in my book, Life on the Green. Gary Player, 90 years young, His biggest advice, words of wisdom, is pursue what you're passionate about. Doesn't matter how young or old you are. You know, you just do what you love to do. So I highly recommend that. A lot of times doing what you love to do might take more time and energy and figuring out how to make a living at it. But if you're passionate about what you do, the money doesn't matter. You'll be happy because you're pursuing something that you love. So just hang in there and figure out a way to make it happen and ride the bumps. Life's a roller coaster, the ups, the downs. You just have to figure out how to handle the challenges and hang in there.
And that's so true. Like, life is a roller coaster. It's just you figuring your way out. And nobody really promised us that it was going to be easy when it comes to life. And I'd like to know, in your book, Life on the Green, which chapter or story in the book that you resonate most with you, like, personally?
There's so many. Every chapter is just so inspirational and uplifting. That's why I wrote the book. I wanted people, golfers and non-golfers alike, to be inspired. So basically, I took 12 legends, six men, six women, booked all these guests, interviewed them at length. Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Tom Watson, Padraig Harrington, Bernard Longer, Ben Crenshaw. Those are the six men. Six women, Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, Dottie Pepper, Amy Alcott, Renee Powell, and Jan Stevenson. And I asked them all to share lessons that they learned from their incredible golf careers that they use every day in their lives. And the lessons are incredible. They're so inspiring. And many I would talk about myself when I do a lot of public speaking and try to motivate people so I could relate to all the lessons that they would share. Jan Stevenson advises us to set goals for ourselves. She always was a goal setter at a very young age, and her father was very instrumental in teaching her this. And she talks about that. Goal setting is very important. Dottie Pepper talks about preparation. You can never be more prepared. It's so important before you do an interview or before you play golf or anything in life to be prepared. Do your research. Go into it as prepared as possible. As I mentioned, Gary Player shares, be passionate about what you pursue. Jack Nicklaus talks about maintaining integrity and sportsmanship. Be honest with yourself and with others. How important integrity is. So many lessons. You'll just have to get the book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. You can order it via Amazon. I'm just very proud of the book because the lessons, you know, apply to all of us, truly.
That's something interesting that you had brought up, that it's for golfers and non-golfers alike, because obviously someone who's very passionate about the game of golf and has followed all these golfers' careers and potentially even your career would be more inclined to pick up the book. And you kind of tapped into it a little bit, but I'd like you to expand. Why would kind of a non-golfer want to read this? What do you think they, I know you mentioned the lessons, but what really could they get out of it to apply to their own life, really?
Well, again, all this wisdom shared by these 12 Hall of Fame golfers, legends, the most accomplished, some of the most, you know, accomplished golfers and athletes of our time. They share things that you and I can relate to. I can relate to these things on the course. Be patient. Annika Sorenstam, you have to be patient as a golfer. In life, you have to be patient. She also talks about work ethic. She talks about in golf, one day she was, when she was 15, she was in Sweden hitting balls on the range with all the other junior players. And it started to rain hard. And so she called her dad and said, "Dad, come pick me up." So he came to pick her up. And as they were leaving, she saw all these other kids still out there on the range hitting balls and practicing. It didn't matter what the elements were outside. And her father looked at her and said, "Annika, all those kids are out there practicing. That's your competition." And she said her heart kind of just dropped, like, my own father is questioning my work ethic. So from that point on, it didn't matter what the weather was like. She just practiced, practiced, practiced. And any successful person, any champion, you have to put the work ethic in. It doesn't just come naturally. Talent is important, but you have to practice. Tiger Woods goes, you know, practiced when he was at the height of his career and beginning his career. He practiced more than anybody. He was just out there honing his skills. Any great champion, from Michael Jordan to Wayne Gretzky to Derek Jeter, Billie Jean King, I mean, no matter who they are, practice really makes perfect. You have to practice your craft to be a champion.
Now, you had said that you got all these people to come be a part of your book, that you ran all the production for your television show when you had it and for your radio show. How would you differentiate the process? We talked about television and radio, but how would you differentiate the kind of creative production process behind putting a book together, a television program, and a radio show?
They're all very different, but I guess the common denominator is interviewing and booking the guest for the interview. For the book, I had a lot more time to interview each personality. For television, again, you don't have much time. The show's only a half hour. Whether it was Sports Interview with Anne Ligori, which aired for 17 years all over the country on sports cable networks, or Conversations with Anne Ligori, that was a half hour show. And that, you know, that includes commercials. So it's actually the content's about 22 minutes. So you don't have much time. On WFAN now with my Talking Golf, it's only 1 hour every Sunday morning. You know, those interviews are short, about 15, 16 minutes. And that, you know, you have to get a lot in that period of time. So every format is different. I think with the book, obviously, I had more time to interview these legends. And then I was able to pick and choose portions of those interviews that I used in the book. My radio show is live. So, you know, yeah, it's exciting. You have to deal with timing. You have to get out in time, obviously, 15 minutes, 16 at the most for each segment. So, yeah, every format's different. But I like the variety. Variety is the spice of life. So I enjoy doing all three formats. And of course, if you're writing an article, you only have so many words. So you have to edit your work. And I like doing in-depth interviews. And then depending on, you know, the medium, whether it's radio or television or an article or a podcast, everyone has different requirements. So that's the challenge of editing. But it's good to have in-depth interviews and be able to pick and choose what you're going to use in the long term.
And Anne, looking back, what moment in your career are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of my Sports Interview with Anne Ligori show. That aired for 17 years every week. I syndicated it myself. I basically went out and brought in sponsors to pay for it. And for my production, I booked all the guests, which I do for all my shows. I just think the legacy of, when I look back, not only will WFAN be a huge legacy with my Hey Ligori, What's the Story show, but this Sports Interview archives, because I was in my 20s and 30s interviewing the most iconic sports legends of our time. And many aren't around anymore. You know, I was so young and able to kind of put this whole production together and did all phases of it, from selling it to booking the guests to hiring the camera crews to promoting it, researching it, hosting it. So I look back and I think, wow, where'd my 20s and 30s go? I was pretty busy because I was doing that show, hosting and producing, executive producing that show, while hosting Hey Ligori, What's the Story, a call-in sports show. So I had to be up on every sport. You know, it was a call-in show, so we had to really have the answers to the questions. And then the Golf Channel show started in the mid-90s. So I was doing a lot of different things. And I guess I'm most proud of the variety and being able to enjoy everything I was doing. I think the joy of doing it, they were fun. I mean, I was going all over the world interviewing different personalities and playing golf with different personalities and getting to know people like Celine Dion and Matthew McConaughey and with the sports show, Ted Williams, just a legend. I can't believe I even talked to him. He was quite old and ailing when I had a chance to sit down with him, but every interview has a story behind it. Maybe that will be my next book.
What's really cool about you, and you see this with the music industry a lot, singers that buy the rights to their own music because they're not going to let some record company futz with everything. What inspired you? Because I've always heard this phrase, be so good that they can't turn you away, bring so much to the table, because you brought your own sponsors, you hired your own production people. What would you say was like the process of buying your own interviews? What inspired you to do that when you had the sports interview show?
You know, Richard, I have to say it was out of necessity. Again, being a woman in the sports media industry was impossible when I first started out. So I wanted to do an interview show on television. I went to MSG Network, to the programmers. They knew of me from my Hey LaGoria, What's the Story radio show on WFAN. And before that, they had known I was with ABC Radio Sports Network covering every team in New York as a stringer. And they saw my byline in USA Today. So all these things kind of contributed to the next step as I was climbing, you know, my proverbial career ladder. But MSG Network said, Ann, we love your work. We can give you a time slot, but we can't pay you. So most people would say, well, can't do it then. I mean, how do I pay my camera crew? How do I pay myself? How do I survive? But that was a door shut, basically. And I just right then and there thought there has to be a way around this. So I opened up the door for myself and said, listen, I will go out and bring in my own sponsors. You can give me the airtime. That's exactly what I did. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't take advertising or, you know, media buying in college. I just basically wanted to do the show so badly. I used my business instincts and my contacts and went to Volvo and got them to sponsor the show for the first 28 weeks. And then went to Sharp Electronics. And, you know, for every one sponsor I was able to bring in, I got tons of rejections. Very tough process to sell your own sponsorships, but I was able to do it. And that show aired, as I said, for 17 straight years. So I did a lot of this, Richard, out of necessity, because when I started in the 80s, again, we didn't have the opportunities. And I'm glad, you know, look, I was able to do it. I don't recommend it for everybody. It's very difficult. But in getting my own sponsors and booking my own guests and putting my own productions together, it was my own show. I maintained the rights to every show I ever did with that sports interview show. So it turned out to be incredible because it's a treasure chest of archives. But back when I was doing it, it was very, very tough, very, very challenging process, but it worked out.
Something else that's great with you is that you have an Ann LaGoria Foundation. And part of the foundation is, we'll get into philanthropic work, but part of it is that you have a scholarship, correct? You have a scholarship fund?
Well, yes. So the Ann LaGoria Foundation Charity Golf Classic has been going on every year for 27 years. And we raise money for cancer research. We have all different kinds of beneficiaries through the years. Tournament is coming up in May, end of May, at West Hampton Country Club. And this year's beneficiary is St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For many, many years, we had a scholarship that Women in Communication, New York chapter, was able to offer. And I was, you know, I am still a mentor to many of these recipients. So for years, you know, we had this scholarship. And, you know, I've been a mentor for a long, long time. So we've been able to do a lot of good out of raising money from this one charity golf event every year on the east end of Long Island.
Talk about putting together a charity golf event like this, because these events are no small feat. So talk a little bit about that.
You're right. Well, again, you know, I'm used to putting shows together, television and radio.
So yeah, it's all hat for you.
Well, putting together an event is a little different, but again, it's all about participants and who you know and getting the word out and getting golfers to commit to the cause, which is a very important cause, you know, raising money and awareness for cancer research. And then you work with the country club, you put on a great event. We try to set our event apart from all the other ones out there. We have great goodie bags. When somebody checks in to play in the tournament, they get a lot of wonderful stuff. This year, they're going to be fitted for a Doc Murphy belt, which is a reversible embroidered belt They're going to get sunglasses, be fitted for sunglasses. They're going to get their choice of a golf cap. They're going to get a copy of my book. And then the prizes are great. And we'll have a rep from St. Jude talk about, you know, how important it is to continue to raise money and support St. Jude. We're all affected by cancer, either directly or indirectly. So it's a very important cause. And I don't think we can do enough to raise money and awareness. Yeah, so, you know, doing it for this long, I do have a great team of volunteers that help. You know, it's a fun day. Of course, it's always weather dependent. So hopefully we'll have a sunny, gorgeous day this year.
And when is the event?
This year, it's May 27th at West Hampton Country Club.
Very nice. So I know that you picked St. Jude's this year, but you have a variety of charities that you've worked with through the years. I was reading, it's a whole list of things. Can you talk about some of these causes and why they're so important to you? Because I know you had mentioned, or I was reading on your website, that based on everything which you went through with your dad and your brother, you wanted to give back. So kind of touch on that a little bit.
Right. So as I mentioned, you know, I lost my dad when I was in college to cancer. And my brother, he was only 22 when he succumbed to leukemia. So, you know, through the years, I've, you know, before I even had my own charity event, you know, I would help the Leukemia Society, the baseball assistance team, BAT, American Heart Association. I mean, there's so many charities out there, obviously. And I was always very aware of, you know, lending support to these good causes. So, you know, there are a lot of charity golf events I play in, a lot of charity dinners I go to. I support a lot of these charities. The American Cancer Society came to me 27 years ago and asked if I would host a golf tournament. And it happened to be at West Hampton Country Club. And I said, absolutely. So we've grown it into this incredible event 27 years later. And obviously, it's a personal thing for me since, you know, I've lost not only my own family members, but, you know, cousins and so many people to cancer. It's such a dreaded disease. And so, I just don't think we can do enough to work to raise money for cancer research.
Shifting gears a little bit, because you had mentioned, or I was reading that you had covered in your career, you've covered Olympics, you've traveled and done that. You do stuff in Ireland with golf. How would you say golf is different around the world, and the world of sports, media and sports broadcasting is different around the world based on where you travel to do these coverage of things?
Well, you know, Tourism Ireland has been a partner of mine for, gosh, over 30 years. They hired me when I still did the TV shows to go over to Ireland and promote golf in Ireland. A lot of people didn't even know about the incredible links courses and golf experiences in Ireland. They would go to Scotland because that's the birthplace of golf, St. Andrews. So I spent decades literally going over there and filming all these incredible golf experiences in Ireland and Northern Ireland. And I continue to do that in radio. Just when you think you've seen the most incredible links course or parkland course in Ireland, you drive down the road and 20 minutes later, there's another incredible golf course. Same in South Africa. I've done TV shows and radio shows on golf courses in South Africa, in Scotland, in Wales, all over the United States. Golf courses are built on the most gorgeous properties, no matter where you are. It's just such an incredible sport because not only is from a nature, a scenic beauty standpoint, but it's also very challenging and really tests your mind. It's really more of a mental game than anything else. And you're out on this most incredible scenic course overlooking the ocean or the desert, no matter where you are. I mean, golf courses are just beautiful. So I would say, to answer your question, they're just, you know, no matter where you are, to me, you can't get a bad golf experience. You know, it's just an incredible sport for so many reasons.
And if you could touch on the work with the Olympics, because that's really cool.
Yeah, so I've covered 6 Olympics for the network radio rights holders, from alpine skiing, where I did play-by-play and hosted shows, to Summer Olympics at the Atlanta Games years ago. I just think the Olympics are an incredible sporting event to work. And in radio, you get a lot of time on the air. Again, as opposed to maybe television, where You might get 1 or 2 minutes if you're at a venue to contribute to an entire show in the Olympics. In radio, did a lot of long form programming, for instance, Lillehammer, covering the women's and men's downhill events. You have to really know your stuff and the pronunciation of all the Eastern European names that can be pretty difficult. And you just have a lot of time to talk about it. And it's exciting. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, I don't cover a lot of Alpine. Every 4 years, I'd be hired by the network radio rights holders to host these Olympic shows. So I just have so many great experiences and memories covering the Olympics. It's truly one of the greatest sporting events, as is the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup, those international golf competitions. So a lot of great memories covering those Olympics, though, I have to say.
And something else, because we're going to wrap up in a few minutes. You mentioned about your book and the lessons that you've learned from the world of golf. What is and the lessons that people have learned from golf. What is something that golf and your career covering golf and playing the game itself, what is something that it's taught you that you've applied to your professional and personal life?
Golf teaches us so much. Golf teaches us to be patient. Golf teaches us to be strategic, to think before you hit the shot, before you do anything in life, to really think it through. Golf forces us to be positive because golf is such a difficult sport. And most amateurs, we don't hit a lot of great shots, okay? We might hit one really good shot that keeps us coming back. So you have to be positive. You have to just remember those good shots and not let the challenge of the game stop us from enjoying it. As in life, there's so many challenges. You just have to continue to persevere and to try to overcome those obstacles. So golf is a metaphor for life. There's so many similarities. And, you know, that's basically what Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf is all about. But yeah, golf teaches us so much. And if we apply what we learn from golf to our day-to-day lives, we'll be just that much better. So great question, Richard. Golf teaches us so much.
And what would you say is something that, a piece of advice that you would give, because we've mentioned about women's sports broadcasting that's been a theme throughout, because we have some young ladies here that want to go into sports broadcasting at Hofstra, and I'm sure at other stations all around the country, college stations. What piece of advice would you give to those young women based on things that you've learned in your own career?
I would highly recommend they read my book because all the advice in my book will apply to them pursuing a career in broadcasting. I think you have to really know your material. You have to really work hard. Your work ethic has to be above and beyond. And you really have, you know, you have to know, do your research. You have to be a good listener as an interviewer. Again, I just think work ethic, doing your homework, doing your research, and never giving up. And being pleasantly persistent, and your character and your reputation is huge. So you always want to do the right thing and be professional. Those are tidbits of advice that I would recommend to anybody, whether you're a woman or a guy.
And Anne, what legacy do you hope to leave for the next generation of women in sports media?
Again, I think, you know, it's more about willpower and perseverance and determination and how to overcome challenges. If I can be an inspiration to men and women in those areas, then that would be my greatest legacy. You know, obviously there've been a lot of hardships, obstacles and challenges in my life, but you know, I'm able to overcome. I love what I do. I have so much joy every day pursuing my passion in sports broadcasting and in media and writing these books and hosting these charity tournaments and exercising, playing golf all over the world. I have a great life that I'm blessed to have. So my legacy would be pursue what you're passionate about. have joy and figure out a way to overcome the challenges and be happy.
And I think that was an excellent place for us to leave it. Now, because you mentioned the book, the tournament, and your show, if you could just mention one more time where people can find out information about all three of those wonderful things.
Right. You can go to my website at annligori.com, A-N-N-L-I-G-U-O-R-I. Follow me on social media, on LinkedIn and at Instagram. It's the, T-H-E, the Ann Liguori. And you can order the books on Amazon, Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf. And there's always a way to get a hold of me. So keep in touch. And I really enjoyed being on the show.
We thank you so much, Ann, for coming on. You've been listening to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU, Hempstead, Radio Hofstra University, 88.3 WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech, and 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section. When dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL, opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets, anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Racing to you, can't see through ya, like I usually can, yeah. But it's just something about the things you do to me, yeah. You keep me places I know I ain't supposed to be. Yes, I'm chasing, slick complacent. Maybe don't be so basic, but I still taste it. I need a break to get over you. I need a spell.
I need a prayer. I need a prayer. I need a prayer. I need a prayer. don't you know the day's light? Waiting for you on the other side. Close your eyes and see the sun. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brad Keselowski, driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang. If there's one thing I've learned after years on the track, it's that having the right amount of pressure in your tires can make or break performance. Properly inflated tires are essential to the health of your car and to keep you driving safely. Check your tire pressure once a month, especially before road trips, or stop by your neighborhood tire retailer for help.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Thanks for tuning in. This is an experiment with time on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM over the airwaves in the city of Pittsburgh, and streaming online to the world up on WRCT.org. WRCT is supported by Rita's Italian Ice. Rita's offers a variety of frozen treats, including their Italian Ice, made fresh daily with real fruit, available in over 95 flavors. Rita's has several locations throughout the city of Pittsburgh, including a stand at 3712 Fifth Avenue near the University of Pittsburgh campus. For more information, visit their website at ritasice.com. And if you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Right now, millions of kids up to age 19 are eligible for free or low-cost health insurance through Medicaid and CHIP. Your child could be one of them. In fact, children of a family of four earning up to $80,000 a year may qualify. Income levels vary by state. Regular checkups, immunizations, and doctors and dentist visits, hospital care, mental health services, prescriptions, and more are covered. For more information or to enroll today, go to insurekidsnow.gov. That's insurekidsnow.gov. Well, thanks for tuning in to the experiment. Got some two lengthy free jazz centerpieces for you tonight. One from Micaiah Nichoko's 1974 album, Micaiah and the Tsosis. That's out of South Africa. And then jumping up to 2018, we got some Japanese free jazz from Akira Sakata later in the program. We're going to kick it off first with Russell Potter, A Stone's Throw, from his 2021 archival release. And then we're going to dig into some proto-punk from Para Ubu before digging into that South African free jazz. Thanks for tuning in. We're just going to ride out this Jim Nolan track, Voices and Wolves, playing music with animals from 1982.